I got questions.
From the things they didn't tell us, to the stuff we still don't know, all the lies they concocted, I'm discovering answers and I'm letting you know.
I got questions. I won't be held down.
I got questions.
And yes, the answers will be found.
Oh yeah, I'm asking because I want to expand my mind. You can call me nosy, but I bet these answers I'ma find. My inquiry leads to what discovery? So come on and get some answers with me.
I got questions.
Hey, this is Charlene Akua Rose Feather saying what's up to my melanated family and our allies. And welcome to I've Got Questions, the podcast where we have real conversations about house business, old wives' tales, flat out lies, and misconceptions. I'm a coach, a speaker, and a motivational teacher, and I'm sharing these conversations to empower you so you can move intentionally in your purpose. Sometimes I'll invite company over, and other times you get to hear from me. But either way, we're going to get these questions answered, y'all. And the question for today is...
Well, my messed up childhood ruined my whole life. Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Akua Rose, and I am excited about today. We got company, y'all, and I'm going to tell you who we got. I'm going to tell you who's here, but first, I want to be very responsible, and I want to add a trigger warning to this episode. We are talking about elements of childhood trauma, and I'm not sure how deep we're going to go. We're also talking about ways to triumph from that. So I just want you to know, if you are still working through a process of healing from trauma that you experienced in your childhood, you may want to, you know, establish a self-care routine for yourself after you listen to this episode, or you might just want to skip this one altogether. I will provide some notes so that you can refer to those show notes after the fact, but I just want to make sure that I'm being responsible with the information that I'm giving out. So with that said, let me tell y'all who came by today. We got Tiffany Simpson Crumpley in the building. And Tiffany and I went to the same high school, but we ran in different crowds. And because of how amazing, you know, the spirit is, we connected in our adult life and just found this amazing. Y'all can't see my hands, but I'm clicking them together. It's just like a click. It just gels together. Tiffany is the founder and principal consultant for NIA Unlimited Consulting Services, LLC. And NIA Unlimited helps individuals and organizations transform lives and communities by providing high-quality organizational development seminars, staff training, and program management services. She's got masterclasses, y'all. From Trauma to Triumph, and I actually sat through that one. Amazing. From Trauma to Triumph, change your mindset, channel your grit, and create a plan to change your life in 45 days or less. This helps survivors of childhood trauma transform their survival skills into a thriving life so that they can experience joy and purpose and help others with their unique talents. Tiffany, I'm already spent like that bio. I'm like, let's go. Healing, please.
I'm trying by God's grace.
So listen, and we're just going to jump right in. Why this subject? Why childhood trauma? Why helping people move from one space to the other? Share your story, whatever you want to share with us.
My why is really because I watched my life, and I know that the divine was always there. I always ask myself the question, because I grew up, you know, in the impact of the crack epidemic. That was not my father's poison of trust. Choice. He was a heroin addict, but very highly intelligent man. Started 3 businesses over the course of his short lifetime, but he had demons, and he took his family through those demons with him. So my earliest memories were after my 5th birthday party and noticing that my mother had a black eye. And wow. So just... that was kind of the beginning of losing this hero image that I had of my dad. I was a daddy's girl, and I just looked at my mom's face, and I had such a joyous day, and I believe then that's when the little advocate came to fruition. It was like, it was something in me that even as young as that age, I just knew it was wrong. I knew it was not right. And so from 5 to 17, it just got progressively worse. He tried to fight his addiction. He went into the VA rehab, relapsed, and it just got worse every time. And the violence got worse every time. And so as a result of it, I had to become a little old lady early. I'm the oldest of four. And so I was my mother's right hand. I was first aid. I learned how to shop very early and budget and things of that sort, or budget with what little we did have and make things, and you know. And so I remember my mom getting arrested for shoplifting food to feed us and stuff like that. And it's just, you know, it was rough, but it cultivated in me such a spirit of resilience, you know, really making a way where there was no way. Even got creative. When I was 12 years old, I helped my mom plot to leave my father the first time.
Wow. So
I was very much a problem solver very early because I had no other choice. And so fast forward, 17 years old, I worked really hard in school because I knew by like 14 or 15, I was like, okay, the only way I'm gonna get out of this situation is an education. I thrived on school, I thrived on dance. And so I said, if I can just stay the course, I can get out of this situation. And I was in an Upward Bound program. Shout out to Upward Bound. They were instrumental in being my village, and they got me into school. And that really was the first strategy that I learned about people like me as early as 12 to 15 years old. The people that I interviewed were just like me. They were very clear. Okay, I got one of three options. I got education, I could go into the military, I could run away. And in some cases, the women decided to marry early so they could get out of the house. So really my why is because I want people to understand that, yes, it's messed up, it's effed up, it's not fair. We got dealt a raw deal, but guess what? The divine gave us the lemons and we figured out a way to make the lemonade.
Yeah.
With what we had. And so I was like, how can this be replicated? How can I catch people before they just completely give up on life and feel like they have to repeat the same hopelessness and passing down that generational trauma? I just have to make that point. Like, when I researched, like after my dad died, I found out a lot about his childhood. And when I found out about that, it all made sense. He was abused as a child. You know, he bounced back and forth. He was the product of a divorce. And so, you know, he never really fit. You know, he dropped out of school in the 10th grade and went right into the military. Because back then, if you didn't act right, you know, they would just send you to juvenile hall. So I just say that to say, and even my mother's story, horrific. She suffered sexual abuse and was a little old lady early. So they just passed that down. And back then they didn't get any therapy. So my wife really just to really reach out to women who know they want better, that have survived really well, they're good at it, but they've settled because they're afraid of losing stability and taking risks to be happy. And so I'm still a work in progress. I was able to, you know, leave home, pursue a successful career in public health, in leader and executive positions. Thankful. I have a family of my own now. We're not perfect either, but we're trying to undo that generational trauma. So that's my story.
That, I'm gonna tell you, that's powerful. That's powerful because, you know, and you probably heard this said, you know, people have gone through some of the same things that we've gone through and maybe worse. And unfortunately, their story doesn't end the same way. In fact, their story did end and ours is continuing. And you made a couple of powerful statements in there. Before I get to those things, one of them I will say was recognizing someone else's story, understanding when you understood your parents' story, it gave context for what you were going through. Did it did it help with the healing process? Because I want to know at what point, you know, you shifted into, you know, helper mode at an early age. And so at what point did it dawn on you that, wait a minute, this is effed up. This isn't the way that, you know, it's quote unquote supposed to be. I need to heal. And at what point did that occur to you? And then did knowing your parents' story help in your healing process, or was it just, you know, important context?
To be honest, it didn't until I got old enough to understand, it's very hard not to take things personally when you are the focus of the abuse directly or indirectly. Now, my father jumped on my mom all the time, beat her brutally, but he never did that to us as children. And just by the grace of God, we had drug addicts living with us all the time, people that he took in. And as far as I know, we could have been sexually abused because of the traffic coming in and out of our house, but it did not help in the beginning. Like, I had to repress my anger in high school. I was very, very angry, but I didn't have time to be angry. I had to figure out how the hell I was gonna get out of East Oakland so I could start my life. And so I was angry, and I vividly remember, if you remember, Charlene, I was a song girl, I was a dancer. So whenever I wasn't in Upward Bound, I was in the dance studio. And Miss Wheaton at the time, Wheaty, was the dance teacher, but she was pursuing her master's degree in psychology. She was working on being a child psychologist. And so I would always go in her office, and I was so angry. And I went in there one day and I'm like, why can't my parents just be freaking normal? Why do I have to be going through all of this while everybody is looking forward to senior activities? I got grown people stress. And I will never forget this. And I'm gonna use some profanity, but I have to say it just like she said it. Yeah. She said, Tiffany, it's not fair. It's messed up. But I'm gonna tell you something so you can move forward in your life and not have a chip on your shoulder. She told me flat out, she's like, your parents have gotten you to this point and they don't owe you shit. And it was like, woo. And in other words, you have to take responsibility for your life.
Yeah, that part is worthy to pause on. And this is not an insensitivity, because you and I both have had, you know, traumatic situations. So I'm not minimizing anybody's experience. But the day we recognize that really people don't owe us anything, that gives us the opportunity. It can be empowering. It can be empowering. Because one thing for me, what I was looking for from people, I experienced sexual abuse from two different individuals, two separate occasions, situations. And I always used to imagine the day, and then all other, I was physically abused, emotionally abused, just all kinds of abuse. And I always used to imagine the day when they would come back and apologize to me. And I was hanging my well-being, my healing, my, you know, revitalization on the hope for an apology from those people. And clear as day, it wasn't a teacher, but clear as day, I'm in prayer. I mean, the ugly tears, not running, all the tears, face all crumpled up. And I'm like, I want them to apologize. And the question came, what if they never apologize?
Yep.
Which, for the record, no one ever has. What if they never apologize? Will you never allow yourself to heal? And that's a tough pill. When she said that to you, did that pill go down smooth? Like, what was your...
No, I mean, if anybody knew Evelyn Wheaton, you know, I'm sure she's still living now, because she was bad then at 51, hitting the Chinese splits in the dance studio, talking about us like a dog because we were out of shape. So, you know, you knew Miss Wheaton was not going to mince words with you. She was honest with you from the art perspective, and she was honest with you from the life perspective. And it was a hard pill to swallow, because I wanted somebody to love me and give me that nurturing. You know, this is a time of transition. Everybody is rallying around their kids because they're graduating from high school. I didn't get all that pomp and circumstance. I didn't get the senior trip. Why? Because I was working and helping with my brothers and sisters. I couldn't even be a normal teenager, so I was angry, but it just really jarred me into reality. She was like, it was almost like, you're either gonna choose to take responsibility for your life, or you're gonna walk around with a chip on your shoulder and use that as a crutch as for every failure. Oh, it's because I came out of a drug addicted household and my daddy talked to me like I was crazy. And so I'm thankful for that. It was not hard, but knowing their stories did not help me in the beginning because I was a kid. And emotionally, spiritually, chemically, I was still a kid with adult stress. So I didn't even have the capacity. It wasn't really until I had to move into caring for my brother and sister. And so I was in my mid 20s, but I didn't have an epiphany like, oh, I need to research their stories. It was like a gradual thing, especially after my dad's death, that I learned more and more. And then I lived with his mother, who was crazy as cat shit. She took care of me, but like, I'm like, damn, no wonder daddy be flipping out, because this how you... And I'm thankful for my grandmother too, because she was emotionally cold. You were gonna be taken care of, your drawers was gonna be clean, you was gonna get a good education, and you were gonna eat good, but she wasn't doing that, baby, let's make some cookies. That wasn't my grandmother. She was mean as a bull. And so I understood just from living with her how he developed so much anger, but I didn't get there. It just kind of gradual. And when I hit 30, that's when I really said, you know, Tiffany, this is not about you. See, when you're on the receiving end, you take what has happened. You're like, it's because I wasn't enough. I wasn't a good daughter. They didn't want it. We tell ourselves this whole story, and it really, you were just in the wrong place at the wrong time, and you didn't ask to be there. But none of their stuff is about us. Yeah. It's their own demons.
So when we say take responsibility for your life, it's not minimizing the experience.
No.
It's actually giving permission, if you will, to say, listen, this was a part of it, and there is healing and processing that needs to happen, and I don't have to get stuck in that place.
Right.
Yeah,
I never really got an apology too, because that generation wasn't baby boomers weren't on apologizing. So even if it wasn't abuse, like, look, I took care of you. You had a roof over your head. Whatever little issue you got with me, you gonna get over it. That's just how that generation was. I'm not making excuses, but taking responsibility for your life also says I'm gonna take responsibility. If I gotta go to therapy, if I have to place, like, there was times, like, when I started college, we did not speak for the entire first semester after I left, because we got into a huge fight the day I left for college. But what I'm saying is that he never really apologized. He did it in his own way. Like, you know, making sure that he picked me up, even though he was really, really sick by the time he was gone the summer after college. And I remember him picking me up, and he had heart problems from all the years of drug abuse. And he had suffered a heart attack, and he was just hanging. He's like, baby, I can't help you carry your stuff down, but I'll wait for you. That's the way my father apologized. Did it make it right? No. But taking responsibility for your life says that you are responsible for your own happiness, and it's not hinged on somebody apologizing to you, because they may never do that. And so a lot of times we're like, oh, if this happens, then I'll be okay. Guess what? Even after he did that, I'm still dealing with the fallout of that in my own marriage. There are times when me and my husband might be having a heated debate, and I will flip the hell out on him over a word, and it reminds me of my dad, and I'm like, oh, not today.
Yeah.
You know, I'm triggered. And he literally said to me, Tiff, I'm not your dad. So we are never never really healed. You have triggers, but when you are aware that you've been exposed to trauma and you take responsibility for your life, you learn your triggers. You know what things are dangerous territory for you spiritually and emotionally. So you have guards, you have limits with people. And so the healing does, you don't have an end point. Even if, like right. I said, even if they gave you the apology, you're not just going to be okay.
No. And you said something. One thing that I often like to say is the power of ING, because ING denotes that it's still going on. It's still in process. So I am healing, and I'm much better today than I was 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And in 20 years, you know, from now, I will be much better then than I am today. It's a process. And I think that's something that a lot of people kind of get confused. They think because I'm no longer in that space, then it's over. You know, if I was being abused in a particular house and I move away from that house, then it's over. Or, you know, in a church or in you know, religious community, whatever. There are indicators that show us that we still got some of that baggage. We're still processing, or we're still living out, even though we're no longer physically in the space. Like you said, there's a cellular memory. Our emotions, our heart, that soul of us has still been wounded and still needs to be taken care of. So let me ask you, what are some things that people might see, some examples that people might see that might be an indication from them? And you touched on it with the triggers, but if you can give us a little bit more, that might indicate that I've not really yet healed from the trauma, or that I might have buried some stuff. Because I remember one of the instances of abuse that I experienced, I completely forgot about it until somebody said something. It was just like a word that they said, and I was like, whoa. And it just came whooshing back to me, almost like it happens in the movies. And it flipped me out because I had completely forgotten about it. But if I would have looked closely, and I was much younger then, if I'd have looked closely, there were definitely patterns and signs and indicators that it's something you ain't healing from. It's something that's still going. So what are some things that people can look for to know that, wait a minute, this is something I gotta pay attention to?
I think that it often shows up in your relationships and how you deal with others. Often when you come out of traumatic situations, you have what I call the self-sabotaging nurturer complex, or what other people might call empath. And so you have to be very careful, because I distinctly remember in my late 20s, really reassessing the quality of my friendships. And really, I attracted people that were wounded, and you attract what you are. It's like, I'm wounded, I'm patching it up here and there, I'm not fully healed, but I'm aware, so it looks like I'm stronger than maybe I even knew I am. So you attract these people with a lot of needy energy, and they're draining to you. And so you have to watch the quality of, you know, are you a friend or are you a case manager? You need to get real clear about that.
Wow.
And so, and I was playing the case manager, and see, it's real sexy because you feel like you're helping people and you're building your self-esteem off. Oh yeah, I helped this person. And I've never been that type of person, but it feeds your need to be wanted, you know, people loving you because you helped them. But at the same time, you're creating this codependent energy. That will come back to bite you in the butt. So that's one thing. But even repeating some of the negative parenting behaviors that your parents did, you swear up and down, I'm not gonna be cussing at my kids, and I'm not gonna be yelling at my kids. Look, catch me on a Friday after work, and I've been running all week on about 4 or 5 hours sleep, and that's on the regular. And so I yell, I let profanity fly, like I am not perfect, but I'm aware that, like, wow, okay, Tiffany, I gotta step back. You know, I don't want them feeling like I felt being on the receiving end. It's even certain words, like you said, one word could send you off the deep end. I'm gonna share a word with you that a lot of women throw around very easily. So my father would not put his hands on me, but whenever I defended my mom or challenged him for, you know, our unstable lifestyle, I was in 12 different schools by high school. We moved from pillar to post, and so whenever I would challenge him, he would call me a bitch and just, you know, go slam off, call me all types of bitches, hoes, all of that. And so, like, anybody that knows me, that's in my inner circle, like, I have to have that conversation with them, because I know that it's cute now and it's the end thing to be like, bitch, bitch, bitch. I won't even watch certain shows for any long period of time because it's such a trigger. Like, I will hear it and I still at almost 45 have a response to that word because it was so hurtful. And I remember being 11, 12 years old getting called bitches. And so, you know, so anybody that's in my circle knows, like, look, y'all want to trade in bitch, do it away from me. There's nothing that you can tell me that women who are empowered know who they are. How does bitch and empowered go in the same pot? That's just me. I'm not hating on nobody that does it, but right. It's just things like that, them triggers. And so really, what else did I put here? Imposter syndrome. No matter how much you accomplish, you still feel like you're not enough, or people don't see how awesome you are because you don't see the awesome in yourself.
Yeah.
That negative self-sabotaging thought, I have to fight those things. That's what I mean, that healing is ever, it manifests itself on a daily basis. Like, every time I take risk as a businesswoman, it's like, who the hell are you to want to do a masterclass series on transforming trauma? What school of psychology you went to? See, that type of stuff. And so that's always going to be a part of your reality. That's how it looks like for me. It may look like something else for other people, or just getting in just toxic friendships and relationships. You have to watch your personal boundaries. So I hope I answered your question.
Absolutely. I hear you saying, pay attention to your thoughts, pay attention to your words, your actions, pay attention to your relationship, and begin to understand what your triggers are. These are all things that you can do for free. You know, there are absolutely coaches, there's absolutely master classes, and we are definitely going to talk about that because I want to make sure that people know how they can connect with you and be a part of that master class. And all of these tools are available, and they are important and they're valuable because they give an outsider's perspective into our situation. And we're so attached to our trauma. We're so attached to our, you know, the positive and the negative of our entire life. And sometimes it takes an outside person to say to us, let me give you some guidance about how you can sort that out. So our stories don't have to be 100% similar. Just knowing that, wait a minute, we share trauma. Your trauma might have been A, and my trauma might have been B, but we share trauma. And so knowing how you progress can help me as I'm progressing out of mine. And so you definitely answered the question about the things that I need to do, the things that I might see that lets me know that I may not be healed from my trauma yet. And you also answered another question I was going to ask you, is about what steps can we take? What are some things that I can do to start my healing process? But I'm going to ask you, if you don't mind, if you could take us a little bit deeper, because you told me about triggers and you told me about paying attention to my thoughts, actions, and words and who I'm around. And I want to dig into that relationship thing, because we're very relational people. I sincerely believe that that is how we were created to be, is to thrive in relationships. And it can be hard to break ties with somebody that's toxic. It can be hard to break ties with somebody that's not healthy for us. How do we do that? What can you offer us to tell me? If I realize that so-and-so isn't serving me well, isn't, you know, it ain't reciprocal, I'm their case manager or whatever it is, how can I go about disconnecting myself from the people, the thoughts, the words, you know, whichever one, but I really want to hear about the relationship.
So One, it was interesting because in my 20s, like none of my relationships lasted, primarily because, so fast forward. So I told you that my dad passed away the summer after my freshman year of college. So that triggered a whole nother level. The trauma reignited itself again because basically my mom had a nervous breakdown. We became homeless after my dad died because my mother didn't have an education. She was an abused woman. We were on every, you name it. We had Section 8, we had Medicaid, we had food stamps that were still the ones that you ripped out the coupon.
So ripped the booklet.
Mm-hmm. I remember government cheese, not government cheese, but government cheese that you couldn't even melt it. Yeah, that old school. Fair. So I'm saying that to say that we had nothing. And so basically she ended up moving in with a friend of my father's, literally down the street from where we used to rent our home at the time of my father's death. Come to find out, that was the house where the dope dealers would cook up the dope to sell. And so my mother basically sitting there, you know, stressing and stuff like that, she develops a habit that she hid from me while I was in college. So I'm saying all of this to say that I ended up having to come home a semester early to take care of my brother and sister, or they would have ended up in the foster care system because a lot of things were happening. The type of traffic that was moving out of the house, it just was not cool. It wasn't safe for them. And so I always was very guarded in my relationships with men. I never really trusted them or let them in because trusting and letting my guard down with the man spelled to me that this man can take advantage of you. Like, I watched how my father dealt with women, and it's like, I'm gonna be very honest about who he was. My dad was an entrepreneur, but my dad was also a hustler and a pimp. So it's like I watched that whole dynamic my entire childhood. So I never really let men in. So like my relationships didn't last because I was so focused on making sure my brother and sister were okay. But guess what? Then when I met my black king, went down the aisle and I'm thinking everything is fine. And I still, there's still this part of me that won't fully let go. And it's a lot. And he's patient with me, and I'm thankful for it. I really am. Because my whole experience was like, if you truly fall in love with a man and you let him in, that means he can exploit you. And that's what I saw. So that I didn't know any different. And so when you say practical steps, I have been in and out of therapy. I have recently returned to therapy to deal. And I've had a very, you know, I've had a beautiful experience because the semester at my dad died, the freshman year of college, the summer after that, then towards the end of my junior year, there's a brother that falls in between me and my baby brother and sister, and he took his own life. So I experienced a lot of loss early, and I was really about to lose my shit. And the village again, like, my favorite African American studies professor, Dr. Milner, I told him, I can't do this. Like, I can't hold it together. I'm about to drop out of school and just move back home to Oakland and take care of my brother and sister. And he found me a counselor. And he was like, will you serve her? And this woman was an academic counselor, and she was really acting outside of her scope to serve me. But she would call me on Sunday nights and say, Tiffany, are you going to class? Can you handle going to class? That would, so that was my first experience with traditional therapy. And so anytime I always felt like I could go back to it, I could always run to a safe place to process and do what I call soul work. And so, so I just want to say that to anybody that's listening right now, that in communities of color, there is a stigma around therapy. You can't talk to everybody. You got to find the right therapist that's culturally competent and knows the Black experience, but understand that there's nuances to that too, or any ethnic group, but you have to have intervention. There are some people that I interviewed for this masterclass series that never had formal therapy. So the other piece that I've seen is that they became very religious. A lot of them were ordained ministers on top of whatever profession that they were in. They got saved early, like usually around between the ages of 17 and 21. For me, I went to the J.W. Hall. I was a practicing Buddhist. I was always in search of God because I remember I used to cry to God and die like, can you just fix this for us? Like, even though we didn't go to church, I knew God was gonna make a way. And we didn't go to church. I just knew that there was a power bigger than me, bigger than my situation, bigger than my circumstances that was gonna fix this. So if I just believed in my heart that things would change, that would manifest. And it did. But I had to do the worldly work, and I don't want to minimize that. You got to do the work, and you have to be unapologetic and not feel like you're somehow less than if you have to talk to somebody. Because me and you joke all the time, you can't come out of trauma and not have some level of crazy going on. You can't. So, and it's okay. I embrace my crazy, and it's good. It's good. Doing my work.
Y'all can see she's embracing it. She's actually embracing the crazy.
You know, hug yourself real good. And so, I mean, and then, you know, and then the things that people talk about too is mindset, fancy speak, that when you have negative thoughts, flip them. If you hear that thought, you ain't enough, you ain't shit, I am the shit. How about that? I came through this abuse. I'm still standing. What you got to say? Because you're talking to that negative self. And so it's almost like, do you know who I am? Last time I checked, I was Tiffany Michelle Simpson. I'm Mike and Linda's daughter. I'm a child of God. What you want? You know? So it's like, you have to be very practical in dealing with your soul work, challenging negative self-talk, being mindful of who you keep around you. I've had the same core set of friends for the last 20 years. And that's another piece. I struggled with trusting women too. Okay. See, a lot of us are walking around. See, a lot of the catty stuff that you see in our community is because a lot of us sisters are walking wounded. How can we support each other as sisters when we can't even support ourselves? We don't like ourselves. So what the hell we gonna like somebody and cheer them on for when we don't like ourselves?
Yeah, and I would love to see that come back, where we have that circle where we can be honest and vulnerable. And I'm hearing you talking about, you know, making a break from whatever that toxic situation is, whatever those thoughts are, making a break. And whether you go to a sister circle, whether you go to therapy, which I can absolutely agree with you and attest that that makes a tremendous difference. Again, it's that outside person giving you a perspective to something that you're attached to. And the other part, you know, going to wherever your faith system is, but the biggest part is making that break. Going to somebody for accountability, going to somebody for a renewed perspective, somebody that's going to drop, you know, some hope into your situation. I love your story about the counselor who called you. And honestly, sometimes we got to exhibit a little bit of strength just enough. I'm seeing an image, so I think in images. I'm seeing an image of somebody like crawling through the desert, and you just got to get far enough until somebody sees you there and then can help you get to the next phase. And that's what I'm thinking of as I'm listening to you share your story. And one of the things to me that's most powerful is that you're willing to acknowledge that you're still in the process. Because I think that's something else that we believe. It's a misconception that we think that just because I'm doing the work of offering guidance and steps and healing that I've healed. But again, We don't do, I don't deal in ED. I deal in ING. And it's a process. And I believe it's powerful. And the work that you do, I want to talk about it, and I didn't get to really delve into your bio. You've been doing work in different organizations and in different, you know, professionally creating all of these trainings and, you know, developing all of these different programs with different organizations. You global with yours. I mean, you've just been all across this here globe. I want to talk about, as we're starting to kind of wind up to our time, I want to talk about how you're helping women today. You've got this masterclass. I want to know how you're helping women today. And then once you share that, share where we can go. How can I sign up for this masterclass? How can I be a part of this so that I can stay in touch with you?
So the From Trauma to Triumph masterclass series is a 6-week journey that is live coaching for 6 weeks straight, and is really dealing with women who have overcome some trauma. It doesn't necessarily have to be childhood trauma, but trauma is trauma. But how do you take those resiliency skills that you use to survive and really use those proactively to say, this is the life that I want for myself? See, that's a hump. We survive and then we kind of get some stability and we kind of settle in that because we're so used to stuff being so crazy that we often will settle in our own lives. We will settle for less in the name of stability. We won't take risks and live to our highest potential because we're scared of losing what we fought so hard to get, which is stability. And so it's like really saying, okay, what is my story? Making peace with it, understanding that healing is the ING, and I can take those survival skills and create an action plan. I have people choose 1 to 2 goals tops. That these are the core things that I've been procrastinating on, that I've been scared to pull the trigger on. And it's a small group, no more than 10 to 12 women. They have an accountability partner. So I take you from what's your story, making peace with it, and what is your mindset? Do you have the mindset to support your transformation? Because if your mind isn't right, you are going to ultimately sabotage anything positive or that's coming into your life. So the foundational work is that mindset stuff, that self-care stuff. Like, many of us struggle with giving so much to where we're depleted and we have nothing for ourselves in all of our relationships, and really understanding that growth, a growth mindset, a positive mindset, and you being unapologetic about preserving yourself. Not just self-care. And I'm not talking about fluffy, oh, I'm going to go to the spa today. No.
Thank you.
No, that means no. And I'm going to say that. No, you have to learn how to say no to people. You can't be everything to everybody. It may very well be that you can only concentrate on you and your family. And I'm really big on what I call the joyful activities, the activities that bring you joy. I shared with you, Charlene, that I danced a lot as an outlet in high school. And as soon as I started having these very adult responsibilities and I was taking care of my brother and sister, I lost dance. And now at 45 years old, that's mine. That's the one activity that I engage in, that when I start moving and grooving, everything is just fine. And so everybody has a right to reclaim that joy in their lives. So that's what the 6-week process is. Practically speaking, you have to have an accountability partner. And how we began this conversation is you have to take responsibility for your happiness. You're not going to come up in this 6-week process and be venting. You're gonna claim victory over venting. And that is a requirement. Because some people like to vent about their trauma, but they're not really interested in doing anything about it. Because guess what? You gotta what? Take responsibility for your life. You can't sit up and use that lack of apology as an excuse. And somebody that's been gone ain't apologizing for your being trifling. I'm just gonna say it. And so that's what the Trauma to Triumph series is all about. And the idea is if you can tackle and take radical action on 1 to 2 goals, it's nothing that you can't accomplish. And you have a framework, you almost have a strategic plan. You create a document, a strategic plan for your life that you use as your guide. And you can just keep recycling. Because see, professionally, I am a strategic planner. So so if I wasn't doing strategic planning, I was training, I was case managing throughout my public health career. So I'm taking that very practical skill set and giving it to women in a way where they can use it to say, this is my plan. So nobody should be able to step to you and say, what are the goals you're working on in life? You should be able to run them off because you're so present.
Let me tell you why that's powerful, because you know a lot of us like motivational speakers and inspirational speakers, and I actually do some of that. I can inspirate and I can motivate as much as the next person.
Girl, we gotta do it. I like that.
You know, I make up words. I make them up as I go along.
We from the lab at E40, so we about to have our own vocabulary all day, every day.
Because we get to, period. but this takes women to another step. It takes us to a deeper level, because once you get inspired, you leave and you feel all fuzzy and warm and furry on the inside, and then you give it about 20 minutes a day, you know what I'm saying, 2 days a week, and then that whole warm fuzzy dissipates because you're back in life. But what you're saying is you're working with them 6 weeks, giving them an opportunity to work through some of their roadblocks, and then helping them develop an action plan so that they can, in the middle of their life, when they back into that, you know, whoosie, whatsie, whatever's going on, they've got this thing to fall back on or to refer to that they don't have to. What did that lady say? Wait a minute, let me go look at my notes. No, you got this plan and it's in you, and it's something you can take action on. I super, super love that. How can I be down? How can people connect with you? How can we get into this? Like, where do we contact you?
So practically speaking, I'm most active on Facebook, LinkedIn, IG, bless my own heart, because I still be struggling with IG. Okay, and I'm back. But Tiffany Simpson Crumpley. So Tiffany, the regular spelling. I didn't do anything fancy. Tiffany like the lamp and the jewelry. Simpson like OJ, and Crumpley. C-R-U-M as in Mary, P as in Paul, L-E-Y. So three social media platforms. You know I'm used to spelling out my name for people. So Tiffany Simpson Crumpley across all those platforms. You can DM me. The actual link to the course, and Charlene can get that out to y'all, type it into the chat box, but it's registerwithtiffany.as.me, and you literally click on there. Right now I'm doing sneak previews. I'm going to be doing one next weekend, because I need to, just based on the run that you participated in, Charlene or Cool Rose, is that that I want to refine the content just based on the feedback. I'm all about responding to what people need as opposed to what I think they need. So this is going to be a progressive, you know, developing and refining of the content, because I have in my own mind what I would like participants to have. And so, and it happens on Zoom, this just like this platform. So we get together, we rock it out on a Sunday night from 9 to 10 o'clock. We have about 15 minutes of Q&A, and then you have assignments to get you, you're getting pieces of the plan throughout the 6 weeks. So register with tiffany.as.me, and you can click to schedule for a sneak preview. It's free, just to test drive the content to see if it's relevant to your needs, and you know, and you get to, you know, test drive it and do some activities with me and see if it's a fit.
I love it. And I can't see how it wouldn't be a fit, especially if someone is listening to this and they're hearing themselves as you tell your story. They're hearing you narrate their lives as if, you know, but you're telling your own story. And so I can't see how it would not be a fit, especially because of, like you mentioned, there's just this thing where we don't talk about stuff. We pretend, we hold these masks and we keep it all in, and we're wounded as we're connecting in these relationships, which means we're not really connecting. This is absolutely relevant. It is necessary. It is valuable. It is crucial, because one of the reasons that this podcast exists is because we all have somewhere to go. We've got a purpose to fulfill. We have destiny to live out. We've got generations to raise up and to train and to instruct and to lead and model the way. We gotta be healthy as we're doing that, and acknowledging the fact that it was not always our privilege to be able to step into these places to begin to heal our mind, body, spirit, soul, etc. Now is that time. So I'm absolutely going to recommend register with tiffany.as.me. It will be listed on my everything, on my website, listed in the comments of this podcast. You're going to get the information. It's going to be out there. Register with Tiffany. I am so excited. I am humbled that you agreed to come sit with us and talk with us and share with us.
No, because my cheeks hurt because I keep smiling. No, I appreciate you, and I'm so thankful that Spirit has reconnected us, and we have been each other's accountability partners. We might go through a season where we're kind of doing our own thing, but just really having a mission and a purpose, and really coming full circle, and being able to do this work in a way that makes sense for us, and really getting the real life struggle of it, because we still got to take care of our kids and we try to build businesses, and then I got the nerve to still be trying to work a 9-to-5 unapologetically. Do what you gotta do to do what you wanna do. How about that? What are you doing?
In that order. Listen, I am grateful. I thank you all for sitting with us, joining us in the conversation. Let me know any questions that come up. You want to ask Tiffany a question? I got questions, but I'm sure you do too. And I may not have asked the one that you wanted to ask. So please message me, or she already told you, you can DM her. We're going to make sure that you get connected. I am Akua Rose. I am so grateful that you shared this time with me. Thank you so much. I'll talk with you later.
See you.
For hanging with me on I Got Questions. Today's discussion is just the beginning. The next part is up to you. Take this conversation into your community with your families, your friends, your church, wherever you go. Discover more answers and ask some questions of your own. And hey, keep me in the conversation. Visit my website at charlenerfeathers.org and click the Contact Me page. If we keep asking and answering questions, we'll keep moving forward. Till next time, peace out, y'all.